Welcome to another episode of IEF's Continued Conversations. In this episode, we would like to further explore the issue of, quote, liberal populism, which sounds like an oxymoron rather than something feasible. And we don't want to look at it only from a theoretical perspective, but through a real-world case study that seems to come somewhat closer to that construct. We would like to better understand the president of Argentina, Javier Milei. My name is Bettina Solinger, and I'm the head of the Friedrich Naumann Foundation's International Academy for Leadership, IAF. And as always, I am joined today by my co-host, political thinker and philosopher, Sven Gerst. So, Sven, how are you today? And who will join us in a minute?
Well, Bettina, I'm not sure how I feel personally. We are recording this right after the German federal election and into the first couple of weeks of the Trump Musk administration. So not a lot to be cheerful to be from a liberal perspective, but maybe we will get some good news from a liberal cause in the case of Javier Milei and from Marcos. And just before Marcos can introduce himself to our audience, I will do a little disclaimer because we are very aware of the fact that Javier Milei is a very polarizing figure. And there are a lot of aspects that we might find from a liberal perspective critical and that we might find very optimistic or positive. So we try to get a balanced view, but we will focus certainly on the things that impact the Argentinian people. And that's why we invited Marcos to talk from the perspective in Argentina. So, Marcos, who are you? How would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, well, thank you, Sven and Bettina, for the invitation. I'm feeling better here in Argentina than you are probably in Germany, so I hope I can share that optimism with you. I'm a political scientist. I'm based in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I'm a researcher for Fundación Libertad, and what I like to do is I like to reflect about liberty and promote liberal ideas. So that's what's most important to me. That's why I write for Argentine outlets, but also American outlets and other foreign-based outlets. And that's also why I'm talking to you, because I want to talk about Argentina, because this, as we will discover through our conversation, developments in Argentina are kind of unexpected always. And what we've been experiencing in the past year and a half has also been unexpected. So, you know, it'll be a pleasure to talk about it from a liberal standpoint.
Okay, then let's talk Argentina. For this time, I think I have to say that I'm kind of the outsider here. Bettina and you have extensive knowledge on Argentina. I haven't even been to Argentina. So, like, I'm talking from the outside, but I guess that's the role of the philosopher. Maybe, Bettina, I bring you in for a second. Can you say a couple of things about your experience with Argentina? Because I don't think all of our listeners will be aware of that. And then we get finally be talking about Javier Milei.
Well, it's quite some time ago that I lived and worked in Argentina for 3 years. So that was the time when Cristina de Kirchner was the president, and I left before the change there. I really very much enjoyed the time in Argentina, but it was also very, I was very sad all the time because there was so much potential, but it just did not lift from the ground. So many well-educated people, vast resources, so much ingenuity also, trying to solve problems. I don't know, at that time, I think it was half or nearly two-thirds of people were living from either state subsidies, tax exemptions, or direct social welfare and other subsidies. And somehow it felt like, okay, this is such a straitjacket that it's very, very hard for Argentina to ever get out of this, because then you would wean people off that ivy of state money they needed to live on, despite all the other good indices that Argentina had. So yeah, that was very frustrating to see. And it was also great to see in that time how the liberals got together, overcame some divides between the different liberal groups, and that ultimately then also led to the first time change in a long time in Argentina, and that's when I left. So before that, I left. I only saw it from afar, and until today, I didn't have the opportunity to return to Argentina and beautiful Buenos Aires. So
yeah. And in our little chat before we started the recording, you said that you imagined that at one point a strongman will rise and kind of tackle the system, but you didn't expect it to be a libertarian. And that's where Javier Milei kicks in, because I think that kind of all shook us from at least the international perspective by surprise, that there is suddenly this very eclectic figure. I have been studying populism for roughly a decade now, and I have been looking at Viktor Orban, Erdogan, Modi, or now, of course, Donald Trump. But Javier Milei, while he has some similarities with them, seems to be a very different character. So, Marcos, what kind of person is Milei? I want to set the scene here with kind of a personal glimpse or like a window into the person that Javier Milei is, because he is quite different from the rest of the populists, but he has a similar style, and he certainly is around them all the time. So he is around Trump, for example, all the time. So people put him in the same basket, but he seems to be, nevertheless, ideologically in a different basket. So what kind of person is he?
So he's definitely a liberal in the sense of classical liberal or libertarian, as they say in the US. Which is what gives me optimism when I see trouble, you know? The fact that I know that he has the right ideas. I met Milei in 2014, so 11 years ago. We traveled together to Tucumán, an Argentine province. I had just won an essay contest, and the ceremony where they were going to give me the award was also a ceremony where Javier Milei was going to speak. Alongside former minister López Murphy, back then they worked together, and so Milei wasn't well known nationally. He wasn't on TV yet, so we got the chance to speak on the flight to Tucumán and then back. He struck me as a very nice person. Really, he took an interest in me, asked what I was doing, why I was a liberal. I was 19 back then, so it was kind of surprising, I guess, to him. And that was the last time I saw him. And then I started seeing him back on TV, you know, but the change that I saw from 2014 to say 2017 or 2018 was that he was much more energetic, right? He was facing other people, you know, challenging their ideas and sometimes also insulting them. On live TV, and that was like the part that drew viewers, basically, right? The people that wanted to tune in and see some sort of shit show, if you will. That was what Milei offered. But then it was surprising that he offered that kind of show by being an anarcho-capitalist or a libertarian, because Argentina is not the country where you would have expected, I guess, a libertarian to rise to TV, become a prominent TV figure, then go on stage, you know, have his own theater piece, and then running for representative first, and then president, and win. That's just completely unexpected to me. But he has the right ideas, you know, even though people place him alongside Trump or Erdogan or other populist figures, you can tell that Milei is kind of uncomfortable when those people like speak about their own ideas, which differ from his, you know. I think at times, and because of, you know, how the political situation is in Argentina and how the political spectrum is defined, you know, in terms of either being pro-left or anti-left, Milei can be categorized as being like Trump or like Erdogan or like Orban, in that they oppose the left in their countries. But that has different meanings, depending on when you are. So, but to sum up, you know, I don't want to drag this for too long. I know that there's lots of questions and topics that we can talk about. I think Milei is a liberal, you know? He may be conservative at some points in terms of his personal life, but I haven't seen that translated into policy, right? Which is important because we judge a president by what he does, it ultimately, right? I mean, the style, the rhetoric can be important, but all in all, what we care about is what the president does. And I haven't seen any conservative measures, you know, actual measures, actual policy measures during these 15 months. I have seen Milei commenting sometimes as though he is some sort of conservative, but in the end, you know, he does have this libertarian chip in his mind that prevents him from being conservative in terms of policy, which is good, I think.
Yeah, so let's unpack that a little bit. Because usually we distinguish liberalism and populism as robust kind of ideologies, while like populism is kind of thin ideology and liberalism is a more substantive ideology, like a proper Weltanschauung, like with robust values behind it. Populism in the beginning was often portrayed as a matter of style, but then emerged as kind of a proper set of values that we see in the figures of Orban, Trump, Modi, Erdogan, and Vukcic or the likes. Yeah. So, for Milei, I think in terms of style, he borrows a lot from the typical populist rhetoric. Like he is an anti-establishment figure. He has his own vocabulary of how he talks about the current ruling elites. I think he calls him the caste, stuff like this, right? So he borrows a lot of these elements of anti-rhetoric. What I'm curious about is how is his party looking like? Because one of the features of populism that we see is that it becomes really a person-centric movement around one person. And here I would be curious, how is the support of Milei in the population and how is the party doing? Because I think you have to give the listeners a little bit of background. I think Milei doesn't have a majority that people assume that he has. And here I think it would be helpful to talk a little bit about the Argentinian political system. So what's the support base of Milei, and how do you think his style and his substance deviate sometimes? Because in style, he certainly is populist with the chainsaw, with his appearance, with insulting the establishment, with kind of centralizing everything about himself. And I don't think, and that's maybe something controversial already, I don't think the Argentinians have made a major shift that all of his supporters are libertarians or classical liberals. They are supporters of Milei, maybe, as his personal aura is charisma. So what do you make out of these claims and these remarks, Marcos?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack in the question too. So let's go step by step. I would say that here in Argentina and perhaps more generally in Latin America, we have traditionally identified populism with the left because it is usually the left which has populist tendencies, you know, in the sense of creating their own language and distinguishing one part of the people from another, the minority usually, who is usually holding the majority in chains. But traditionally, this has been either the media or the landlords or oligarchs who own all the land. And that has served to legitimize left-wing policies, right? In this case, it's very different. Because even though we have this distinction, right, between one part of the people who rightfully earn the living and some other part of people of the people who live off the state, basically, this distinction is very different from what we are used to seeing from the left, right? So it is populist, definitely, in its style, because Milei is constantly trying to portray himself as the leader of the right part of the people, but it is also liberal in that what is denounced as part of the people who are not so good is basically the people who live off the state, which is not just public employees, which in many cases probably didn't have another chance at a private sector job, but we're talking here about businessmen, lots of businessmen, business people who have created their companies basically because of state privileges, right? Because of tariffs, because of subsidies. We're talking about people who, in my view, are rightfully pointed out to as, you know, people who are in part culprits of the situation in Argentina. But then the second part of your question is interesting because it's true that Milei doesn't have a majority. And it's true that another feature of populism, which is that it becomes individual-centric, is what's happening in Argentina. And that concerns me a little bit because I would like a liberal agenda to move, to carry, you know, for years, to be implemented even after Milei leaves eventually office. Today, it is not clear who or what party would be, you know, the responsible for implementing liberal policies after Milei, because Milei's party is very, very weak. And that is both a feature of the system in that Milei's party has only won seats in the last election, in which we Argentines elected only half of our House of Representatives and only a third of the Senate. And so it would take, you know, another 4 years to really see Milei's party rightfully represented in Congress, because we adopted the American model, right, with this inertia. But then the weakness of Milei's party is a decision by Milei himself, because it doesn't seem like he wants to see people that, you know, become relevant by themselves. What's important is that they follow Milei. And this we see in voters too. This can be checked when you look at polls by reputable pollsters in Argentina, that people like Milei. They don't like necessarily libertarianism or classical liberalism. I think that's also a problem. But if you look at it from a different perspective, we're very lucky that this, you know, strong man that has arisen in Argentine politics is an anarcho-capitalist, because he could have been anything, really. As Bettina was saying before we started recording, you know, everyone was fed up with the situation, with the economic, the political situation. So a strong man, which is typical of Latin American countries, was bound to appear at some point. Now, the fact that this person is an anarcho-capitalist, a libertarian at heart, I don't know. I think that's nothing short of a miracle, really, because he could have been a leftist. He could have been a rightist populist, a nationalist, and he's none of those things. But it concerns me that we aren't seeing, we definitely see more interest in liberalism. I notice that everywhere I go, I notice that many people want to learn about liberal ideas, liberal values, but I don't think there's a liberal majority. If there were a liberal candidate other than Milei today in an election in Argentina, I don't think he would win a majority the way Milei would. So I think we need to work on that as liberals in Argentina to spread the message so that once Milei leaves, you know, we still have liberalism.
Yeah, just before I hand over to Bettina to dive deeper into this. What is interesting, of course, about your first part of the answer is that this is a classic Rothbardian argument of a class theory, a libertarian class theory. So Rothbard, in one of his famous essays, says we have to move away from the class distinction of the Marxists who distinguish between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. But instead, we have to look at a different class theory, and that is people who are productive and people who are unproductive. And by that, he means people who live off the state and people who basically contribute to the state by taxes. So, and I see these themes very distinctively in Milei, in the way he carves out his rhetoric. So one of the figures that he always draws inspiration from is obviously Rothbard, and I can see the themes there. And I have kind of ambiguous thoughts about Rothbard itself, but it's, I think, important to note that he comes out of a very distinct school of thought. But now let's look at the realpolitik again. And Bettina, I think you will dive deeper into that.
Yeah, I was also interested in his cabinet. I mean, his ministers are not always on the same political page or do not come from the same corner of politics. So his vice president, ultra-nationalist conservative, wants to rewrite the narrative of the military dictatorship and things like that. And then you have someone like Patricia Bullrich, who comes from a liberal party. So how does this work? I mean, he said he would just want to assemble people who get things done and can solve problems. And it seems to be very, very pragmatic to say, I don't care where they come from and what they think, as long as they can do their job. Is that your assessment as well?
Yes, absolutely. The composition of Milei's cabinet tells us lots of things. And I always show that composition of the cabinet as an example of Milei's pragmatism. Whenever he insults, you know, people, or and people think, oh, man, this guy is a lunatic, crazy. He will never be able to forge alliances. And then I tell people, no, that's not really the case. I mean, you mentioned Bettina, Minister of National Security, Patricia Bullrich. Well, she was a contender in the 2023 presidential election. He ran against Milei. She said terrible things about Milei. Milei said unspeakable things about her. Like he literally labeled her as a terrorist back in the 70s when she was a teenager. All of a sudden, for the runoff, they forged an alliance, and then she became her minister. And that seems to be working pretty well, because Patricia Bullrich used to be the Minister of Security for Macri between 2015 and 2019. So she knew the ministry, she knew the job, she did a pretty good job, really, with police, you know, with equipping and improving police. And she's doing that job back again under Milei. So it doesn't seem like Milei cares too much about the ideology of his ministers in most cases. Interestingly, it seems like Milei lets people just do their jobs, really. And he's not into details, you know, on a daily basis in terms of, for example, national security. But what he really cares about is the economy, right? Because that's arguably the most pressing issue in Argentina. Remember that when Milei took office, we had over 200% inflation annually, which was almost unheard of in 2023 anywhere in the world, but Venezuela, for example. Because his focus is the economy, he has appointed two ministers that are doing economic reforms. And he does really care, you know, about the details of those reforms, right? So we have Minister Caputo in the finance ministry. And Milei seems to have entrusted him with, you know, balancing the budget and probably refinancing the debt, because the inherited debt was very high by the former Peronist government and also the Macri administration, and lower taxes. You know, lowering taxes is a goal of Milei. But of course, when he took office, you know, we had this giant deficit, and the only way to balance it was to cut spending, but not really cut taxes, because that would have been worse for the problem he was trying to solve. So there's a second generation of reforms that I hope it's coming probably after the midterm election, or maybe possibly even after a potential Milei re-election in 2027, which is going to focus in lowering taxes. But at the same time, Argentina's economy has other problems, other issues that had to do with regulation, bureaucracy, you know, protecting very specific people who literally live off the state because they would be unproductive in terms of Rothbard in a free market. And so Minister Stutzenegger, he is the minister for deregulation, and he's the other key figure, right, in Milei's cabinet. He is, I think we could call him a classical liberal, probably not a libertarian, but he is really doing a very impressive job, because he and his team, I went to visit them a few months ago, are always questioning whether whatever law or rule or decree they see is necessary at all. They're not thinking about how to improve public administration by getting rid of, you know, paper and just digitizing everything. They're really asking themselves, is this regulation compatible with a free economy? And so Minister Susanet here and his people are deregulating basically all aspects of the economic life in Argentina. There's a study by Cadus Ian Vasquez and Guillermina Suderschneider that says he has deregulated at least two. That Milei has deregulated two aspects of daily of the economic life in Argentina per day since he took office. And if you tune in and see Minister Sulzenegger's tweets, every day he's announcing something different. And from the most different aspects of life that you can imagine, deregulation in the aviation industry, to the fruit industry, to exporters, to importers. And so this is a very delicate job because Argentina has traditionally been a very closed economy. And so opening up very quickly could be a problem. But, you know, Minister Sulzenegger and Minister Caputo are working on trying to make Argentina more competitive by lowering spending, lowering taxes, and deregulating. The rest of the ministers, really, it doesn't seem like Milei has them as a priority. He has picked people who he thinks can do their jobs, and he lets them, basically. I don't really see anything in his agenda that is not economic, which can be either good or bad depending on how you assess it. But this is why I'm talking about the two finance or deregulation ministers.
Can we go back 15 months when he got elected? Where was Argentina then with regard to their economic power, financial situation, and so on? And what has he done since then? You have already laid out a lot of things. I mean, the most prominent thing is probably that he really started with half the ministries, as he said, when he was campaigning. So it's down to 8. Slashing regulations and so on. And what is the situation right now? Is it that good so that people are still confident that it will get better after it has been worse? Or is it slowing down? What are the numbers? What are they telling you?
So back when Milei took office in December 2023, Argentina was very close to hyperinflation. We had been experiencing monthly inflation rates of over 10%, and inflation can spiral very quickly. You know, if it gets to 50% a month, then you can officially call it a hyperinflation. Thankfully, we didn't have that. But one of the first things Milei did when he took office was he devalued the currency officially, so that the exchange rate would be more similar to the market price, because the Peronist government had kept the exchange rate very low artificially, because they thought that was going to be better for controlling inflation. But that was causing a lot of trouble with importers, with exporters who were being paid a lot less than they would be under a free economy. And so he devalued the currency officially. He immediately froze spending in lots of areas. Also because since he has a minority in Congress, he can't pass a budget without some sort of alliance. And so, interestingly, he chose not to introduce a bill for 2024. And what that does in the Argentine system is it allows the government to just extend the 2023 budget and add any additional resources at their will. And so in that way, Milei was able to control where federal money went, basically. And that was how he was able to balance the budget in just 1 month after office. We're talking about a deficit that was about 5% of the GDP. So he really cut spending. He cut spending about 25% real terms, which in 1 year is almost unheard of, really. Unless you're talking about hyperinflation or a default, none of that happened. There was a lot of concern when he took office that there was going to be some sort of default or hyperinflation, which thankfully didn't happen. Of course, the poverty rate went up immediately in December, and there was a recession, also caused by the freezing, basically, of all federal public spending. But that turned around very quickly. And so we're seeing a recovery right now, 15 months in, but it's very strong. It is looking very strong. The poverty rate has fallen by about 17 points, which is very impressive. And in the meantime, the government has enacted many deregulations, although there are many still to come. The government has tried to pass privatizations of state-owned enterprises. It hasn't been able to have Congress pass them. So that's tricky. It will probably have to wait until Milei's party is a little bit more robust in Congress. But the poverty rate, as I was saying, has fallen. The economy, it doesn't seem to be in a recession right now. It seems to be booming. Credit is back. You know, we had no credit in Argentina whatsoever, basically, which is a surprise when you look at other Latin American countries, and particularly like strong markets like Chile or even Brazil, which the economy, which doesn't really do that well. They have lots of credit. We had no credit whatsoever. Credit is coming back. That's very good for the economy, because, you know, it's doing lots of good things for the real estate market. For example, one of the deregulations that Milei enacted, which was very good for the people, was the repealing of the rent control laws that Argentina had, which were replaced with nothing, basically, literally nothing. So now contracts can be just, you know, arranged between people freely. And that has caused the real price of rents in Buenos Aires to fall by 30%, which is incredible. Also because in daily life, you know, I was looking for an apartment in 2022 to rent. It was impossible. You couldn't find any. If you found anyone that had an apartment in the market, then you would, you know, kind of like in Berlin, you would, you know, drop everything and just go see it, because someone was going to take it away from you, because the formal market was so small because of regulations that it was impossible to get a place if you didn't know anyone who had an apartment. Now, that's very different. That looks very... If you need an apartment, you go to the formal market, there's tons of apartments, and they're very well priced because of this deregulation. So, you know, deregulations, you know, the inflation rate has fallen also. It peaked at 25% monthly in December, right as Milei was taking office. It is now down to about to barely over 2%. There's still, of course, a lot of way to go. Argentina can have a 2% a month inflation rate, but, you know, coming down from 25%, it was pretty significant. And I would say there's one big challenge for Milei's economic policy yet, which is the exchange rate, because the government controls it today. The gap between the official and the unofficial exchange rate isn't that big. It's about, it fluctuates between 10-15%. That is a lot less than what it was in the during the Peronist administrations. And that, you know, makes the economy coordinate better and be much better. But, you know, the government still, because controlling it is also part of the disinflation program, right? And so at some point, everyone is expecting that Argentina lifts its currency controls. I'm expecting that too. I think that's important. Milei promised to do it. We just don't know when that's going to be, because what they fear is, with a lot of foreign money basically tracked in Argentina, that if they lift currency controls, they will, you know, those funds will just go away very quickly. And so the peso will get devalued, and we again will be under high inflation. Other people, though, are saying, you know, if Milei is trustworthy enough, those funds which are trapped in Argentina because of currency controls will stay. They will not necessarily go. That would cause a different kind of problem, which is that the peso would be way too overvalued. And that will be, that would cause other problems for the exporting industry here in Argentina and other industries. But economically, you know, this has been a pretty good 15 months. Nobody expected that Milei's team could tame inflation so quickly, could bring down poverty the way they did so quickly. We are still expecting more deregulation, more privatizations, the lifting of currency controls. But so far, I would say so good.
Yeah, just maybe one more technical follow-up here, because Milei in his initial campaign was talking a lot about the dollarization, and that hasn't obviously happened yet, right? Is it something on the horizon, or is he something more in favor of a very libertarian position of like currency competition, or how does he see that? Because obviously from the outside, the fiscal re-engineering of Argentina is impressive, just on a statescraft level, the way he like took on the central bank and the currency exchange rates and the deficit spending overall. I mean, that is very impressive. Although, of course, he warned, and that makes him maybe different from other populists, he warned that this will be a very hard year to go through. I think Donald Trump has also measures that makes transformation very hard to on the people, but he like campaigns on a golden age, while I think Milei campaigned on a tough time that will be ahead, and we seem to be coming out on the good side of things. So just quickly on the dollarization part, and then we, I think, jump more into the deregulation ministry, because I think that is most interesting to our listeners.
Yeah, so dollarization hasn't happened. Of course, that was a campaign promise that the Milei team is now saying that will be fulfilled. But they're now talking about currency competition and something that's called endogenous dollarization, which is the idea that people will embrace it, that, you know, all controls on the dollar will disappear, and people will be able to choose the dollar or the peso, and both, you know, may live together. And since people trust the dollar more than the peso, then they will flock to the dollar and drop the peso. In my view, it doesn't seem like this is going to happen if people trust Milei, because if people trust Milei, then they will probably trust the peso. So I don't see this endogenous dollarization happening anytime soon. But it could be that as the controls on foreign exchange rates and the dollar particularly are lifted, that we will start to see, you know, people transacting in dollars. We already do that in Argentina in some aspects. For example, house prices, even cars are sold in dollars, not in pesos. But for the day-to-day transactions, I don't really see that the peso will be dropped by the people, unless this is an official, you know, decision by the government, which would be very expensive, as many economists noted, because Argentina will need to borrow a lot of money, basically, so that the exchange rate to which the peso would be converted to the dollar isn't too high. Because if it is too high, then the dollarization would just mean that people will become a lot poorer very fast. And Milei doesn't want that. So I don't really see dollarization happening anytime soon. Milei himself has started talking about currency competition, a sort of bi-monetary economy where the dollar and the peso can live together. And I think that's where we're heading, really. And in terms of deregulation, well,
Let me set that up, maybe the deregulation, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff happening also when we look at it from a global perspective. So I think Sturzenegger and others. I followed him quite closely because I think he gave a recently great talk with Markus Brunnenmeier. We can link to the talk in the show notes, I must say.
I said,
yeah, and it was great. And I think they take a very different approach than, for example, Elon Musk with Doge. So, but Doge and Elon Musk, they take inspiration, obviously, from this Ministry of Deregulation from Milei. And while I think with Federico Sturzenegger, you have somebody who is very firm on what to do, with Doge we see kind of a completely different approach of like cutting, I mean, mostly I think the funding of political enemies. We see here like proper statesmancraft to a certain degree, that they are slashing legislation, right? Bureaucracy, regulation, and not necessarily like, okay, only specific funding of things that we don't like in the culture war or whatsoever. I mean, that might be part of it and you can elaborate, but what is their approach? And also, what is the legitimacy of Sturzenegger and his ministry? Because again, with Elon Musk, we have kind of the debate about unelected bureaucrats. But I think the way this ministry was created is also to a certain degree by decree itself. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the origin story of this Ministry for Deregulation in Sturzenegger, and then what they did and their approach looks like, because they also have a limited time horizon, unlike Elon Musk, it seems.
Right. So there's lots of interesting things to be said about the Ministry of Deregulation. The first, I think, is that it's very interesting because Milei gets criticized because of his supposedly anti-institutional approach to many things. But in this case, the Ministry of Deregulation is only acting with the faculties that it has because Congress delegated those powers to it. And this happened last year in 2024 after the Milei government got one Congress victory and had the Ley Bases passed, which was an omnibus bill that included many changes. Originally included lots of changes. Of course, after negotiations, you know, the bill was kind of watered down. But still, there were delegations. There was a delegation of power in terms of the reform of the state that was explicitly given to the government for 1 year. So the thing is, if you go to the Ministry of Deregulation, you get in, you see Sturzenegger's office, and right alongside it, there's this sign that says, you know, whatever days left, days left for those powers to expire. So when I was there, he had about 200 days, I think, because those powers were delegated for a year. And if he wants them to be extended, they will need to ask Congress to extend those powers again. I think right now we may be about, I don't know, 120, 130 days left of administrative powers to reorganize the state and bureaucracy the way Sturzenegger's doing it. But they are very well aware, you know, that this is a delegation of powers by Congress. And they're only acting because Congress has enabled them to do that, right? And then you were talking about what their approach is, because they don't really have a lot of time. Well, the bureaucracy in Argentina is so chaotic, and regulations can be crazy to follow, or they can be so tailor-made to one group, one businessman, that the government actually launched a website that's called Report Bureaucracy, basically. And they have received many, I don't even know how many really, but it's probably thousands of complaints by people that are saying, you know, in my industry, there's this rule that only benefits this one group, and we all others need to pay a lot to, I don't know, accountants to comply, and that raises costs, you know, that kind of thing. So I think they found themselves in a position that was so chaotic that they decided to just ask the people, you know, what the problems are. Of course, some of these problems we know because, I don't know, because they're public, they're public issues. But some of them are very well obscured, right? Among the most well-known deregulations, for example, is simply enabling Starlink to work. That was banned in Argentina. It was banned before 2023, even though our neighbors allowed Starlink, allowed satellite internet, basically, to work. That was a disgrace because Argentina is, I think, the 8th biggest country in the world. So we can have high-speed internet everywhere. People working in the fields need internet to make their machines work because lots of machinery depends on internet to increase productivity. This was not allowed under the Pernas administration, the last Pernas administration, just because there really was no reason to do that. And if you had if you were lucky enough to get internet outside major cities, then the service cost absurdly high levels. So I've seen anecdotes of people telling me, I mean, that the price of internet in the outside of major cities has dropped by 90% once Starlink appeared. This was because there was a local monopoly which could charge basically anything to anyone who wanted internet in a remote location, but now people can just have Starlink, right? And so the impact of that is likely to be seen in years to come, right? Because if this is maintained, people start bringing machines that depend on internet, and so productivity increases, but it's not something that will immediately have an impact on the economy, right? But anyway, there's lots of examples of just really crazy regulations that were designed to protect monopolies in very different areas of the economy.
Yeah. And I mean, they deregulated the economy. As you said, there's on average 2 deregulations a day. I think they slayed the deficit by more than 30%. They laid off 50,000 people. They cut the intermediaries in the social programs. So I think in terms of...
That's really important.
Yeah.
That's very important. If I may add something.
Yeah, please. I think it's very important. Yeah.
I live in Buenos Aires. And I moved downtown about 6 months ago. And I live only one block to Nueve de Julio Avenue, which is the widest in the world, and which was the meeting point for demonstrators for decades. And so traffic would be terrible all the time. Every day there would be a different protest, different demonstration, which would cause chaos in Buenos Aires. And in 6 months that I've been living here, I haven't seen one demonstration that cuts traffic, basically. And that has been a mixture of policies, right? It has been the determination of the Minister of National Security that traffic cannot be blocked, that you can demonstrate, you can do so in a park, you can do so in public areas, but not where people are trying to go from one place to another. But the other reason why this has happened, and really, in 2024, we really didn't see major traffic issues in Buenos Aires, was because of what you were saying, Sven, that the Milei government just cut the middleman in terms of direct transfers to the poor, right? Because a lot of these people that were coming to downtown Buenos Aires and protesting were being forced to come, were being dragged to the streets of Buenos Aires by middlemen who wouldn't give them money unless they attended the protest, right? That was very simply, it was a very simple issue to solve. You just need to pay, you know, the person who needs the money directly and have no intermediates. And so changes like that can sometimes get like overlooked, particularly under an administration like Milei's, where so many things change every day that you can just forget about it, right? But it's changes like that which are very important, which people like, and I think these are reasons why Milei's popularity hasn't dropped. It didn't really drop when the recession struck at the beginning of 2024, when inflation skyrocketed at the beginning. And it has been pretty steady, really. And I think it will continue to be so as long as some sort of normalcy comes back to Argentina, and not just in terms of the economy, but also in terms of this, right? Traffic, to just demonstrations. You know, we can be civil. You know, as long as some sense of normalcy comes through an for a not normal president, really. I think Milei will keep.
That's really, I mean, amazing. I remember all those protests in front of parliament, blocking the streets, the school buses, and I don't know what. It was a huge hustle every day. And it was a whole industry, as you said. I mean, you could buy kits for protest called piquetero. So firecrackers and stuff all already packed and be glad to buy them and then make a big fuss on the streets. And that was nerve-wracking. You lost 2 hours of your daily life only in traffic for not traveling too far. That's a high cost.
Yeah. It's very funny to me that, you know, lots of, in this case, left-wing journalists or cameramen, they go to the people at bus stations and train stations, and they try to press people into saying, you know, Milei is terrible, right? They ask them, so like literally this question, Milei is doing really bad, right? Because prices are still going up and so and so. And people are like, well, we're doing pretty well. This seems to be pretty normal. I think we're gonna do much better. You know, inflation is coming down. So it's not just, you know, the middle class or the upper class, which where you can find Milei supporters. It's also in the lower class, which is the reason why Milei got elected in the first place, right? Because you can get 56% of the vote without including the lower class. Mm-hmm. So poor people are also still supporting Milei because Milei was smart enough to, at the same time, for example, that he cut the middleman for direct transfers, he increased these direct transfers, right? So we see, during 2024, we saw a 25% drop of real spending, but we saw direct transfers go up in real terms, right? Because Milei understood that fiscal adjustment is painful. He literally said that. Sven was remembering that. When he took office, his first speech, he said, the next months are going to be terrible because we are inheriting something that is terrible, but we need to fix it. And so he understood that the process was going to be very painful to the poor, and he was smart enough politically to support them as he was cutting spending at the same time. So politically, you know, this political genius of Milei is very interesting because he seems to be very pragmatic in terms of the people he surrounds himself with, the policies at times that he enacts, but the direction seems to be very positive, which is why we were happy about it in Argentina.
Yeah, but there's a lot of the happiness and rosy picture that we paint so far. And, you know, like, as I said, for many countries that the people who will be listening to this is very pressing. The fiscal issue, the economic issue, these are very important issues. And I think there, Milei's track record looks remarkable. But nevertheless, we have to look at liberals also at the perspective of, for example, the rule of law, and we have to look at social policy, and we have to look at geopolitics to a certain degree. So Marcos, kind of now getting into the more critical element of Milei. If I look at, for example, the rule of law and the rule by decree, that's something that we now observe with Donald Trump's administration, the endless executive orders. That's also something we see with Milei, right? His party has only a minority in the Congress, and it has only, like, I think, 10 senators or something. So overall, he has to rule a lot by decree, right? And recently, this case popped up of appointing Supreme Court judges. And here, a lot of controversy has been spun around this particular appointment of two Supreme Court judges by decree. What do we make out of this, especially as classical liberals who are concerned with the rule of law and having the experience from Poland and Hungary, where we see what the implications of undermining the rule of law are? And then secondly, why I think I asked this question is because Milei, if I just look at him from isolation, I think, like, from a classical liberal perspective, that's very interesting, maybe even cheering on the side for him. But then I see him on the international stage with people like Viktor Orban, with people like Donald Trump. And to put it really bluntly, I think, like, Milei is releasing Argentina from Peronism, and Donald Trump is implementing Peronism in the United States. what's his fascination with these people? I mean, the foreign leaders that were invited to his inauguration is like Meloni, it's Viktor Orban, of course, Zelensky also. But nevertheless, what do we make out of his geopolitical appearance? Because Argentina is now on the global radar. Everybody talks about Milei. So rule of law and geopolitics, how do you place Milei here? And is there something really to worry for us to brand him as a liberal?
Well, the decision to appoint two justices by decree, I don't like. Of course, as a classical liberal, I find it problematic. I also find it problematic because it's not the first time that this happens. The Macri administration tried to do this in 2015 too. They found that the measure was very controversial. So eventually, they still got the Senate to vote for the justices. And it's important to know that this decision to appoint justices by decree has precedence and also needs to be at some point confirmed by the Senate. It's not that Milei can just appoint justices that will stay in the bench for life. This is an extraordinary procedure that was used mostly at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. It was outdated, really, until 2015 with the Macri administration tried to do this, and now it seems like Milei, after a year of trying to get his two justices passed, got frustrated and just decided to appoint them. They would only be if this is maintained, they would only be in the bench until December. So that's the good news. I mean, the good news is that this is an extraordinary measure. It's not Milei deciding to overthrow the rule of law and saying, okay, these justices will just be here for life. Also because the other three justices in the Supreme Court agreed to, you know, take a fourth one in. They're still waiting on the fifth one because it's unclear whether he's to resign from his current bench or can just take a leave. But they still took the fourth one, which shows that they agree with the legality of the measure, but of course, I don't think it's a good it's good news, right? Because I think justices should be confirmed by the Senate. It's true that Milei only has about 10% of senators, which is really low because you need a majority in the Senate, a 2/3 majority. So you would need very harsh negotiations. The government is probably going to be in a better position to negotiate after the midterm in October. So maybe next year they can actually confirm justices the way they should be confirmed. They're still not going to get to 2/3 by themselves, of course. But I do hope that that at some point these justices do get confirmed by the Senate because this is an emergency procedure. Everyone knows this. And I wouldn't like to see the president setting a precedent for other leftist governments in the future or rightists to do the same. Because these judges may be good, they may be liberal, but other governments will also come and will try to appoint their own justices, and those justices may not be as good. There's also...
It's the same habit with the bad executive orders that were kind of normalized right. Even under Democrat rule.
Right. That's also true. And there's also some controversy as to why Milei picked one of the two justices, because he is no liberal at all, very clearly. He's a very corrupt judge, really. The understanding of it is that one of the judges is just a pro-power justice, and so he will just say whatever he will say yes, basically, to whatever Milei says, just because he nominated him. Then the other justice is a lot better legally, juridically. But that's for rule of law. You were also asking about geopolitics, and that's a very delicate issue in Argentina right now because of what's been happening with Trump and Zelensky. Zelensky came to Argentina in 2023 when Milei took office, and it was kind of weird to see Zelensky and Orban at the same ceremony. But nevertheless, they both attended. And Milei was very much pro-Zelensky until very recently. He now is not. And the reason why he's not, I don't think has to do with personal convincing that Zelensky is doing anything wrong. I just think Milei is trying to get closer to Trump, you know, getting closer to the United States at this stage. And I think the reasons why this is so are twofold. One is that the U.S. has a very strong influence on the IMF, and Argentina needs a deal with the IMF because it needs to refinance its debt. Because even though we balance the budget, you know, interest payments are only going to go up in the next few years, and this could become a serious issue for Milei. Because remember, we already cut 25% real spending, but that doesn't mean we can do another year of 25% cuts, right? Everything has a limit. So the government needs a deal with the IMF, and so they're trying to be pro-Trump because of that. And there's some indication, most recent, and I would welcome this, of course, if it happened, that the Milei administration will try to pursue a free trade agreement with the U.S. Of course, this would be huge for the Argentine economy. I don't really think that Trump will sign a free trade agreement because we all see what he does with tariffs. I don't think he believes in free trade. But there's speculation that if Milei is an ally, a trustworthy ally, then he can make an exception to Argentina. So I think those are the reasons why Milei is trying to portray himself as being pro-Trump, which in turn has affected how he deals with the Ukraine situation, right? And more generally, I think, and I think I said this at the beginning, I think Milei has found friends, if you will, in people that oppose the left in their own countries. But that really, that's awkward. That's very uncomfortable for liberals to watch in Argentina, and I think also to himself. But it's interesting that when you see what Milei says at these forums, for example, Milei has been to CPAC, right? The conservative meeting in the U.S., which has turned very much nationalistic and Christian in the past few years. But Milei's speech was almost identical to the one he gave to the Davos Forum or that he gives to Congress here. And it's an eminently liberal speech. So it's kind of weird because you would expect him to adapt to the audience and be nationalistic and Christian, but he is not really, which tells me that his ideas are correct, but that he has found some sort of group, you know, where he can belong internationally, where he gets, you know, all cheered up because he's certainly not getting cheers by the left in the world. And so I think that's on a personal level, maybe a psychological level, why he's close to these people. So that's my read of it, geopolitically.
Would still cast a shadow on everything. So yeah, wait and see how far or pragmatic he is with his alliances. Then
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we are approaching the end, and I just want to close on two little things. First of all, thank you, Marcus, for giving so much insight and for being so generous with your time. One thing, because you mentioned the Davos speech, I listened to both Davos speeches. The first one was kind of a lecture on economics. I very much liked that. I'm not sure any Milei supporter would bear through the whole lecture there because they are more for the carajo thing there, I guess. But the second Davos speech was more on the cultural war. So very quick answer from you. Do you see that there's a risk that he will turn dark through all of these culture war issues, that he will now he has focused on fiscal policy, on economics, that he now will turn dark? If you just had the outlook and very short, what do you think? Is there a risk that he will turn dark?
I think the risk is always there, but I think it's a minimal risk because I don't think Milei believes in most of the elements of the cultural war that the right is trying to fight. And because I see that the Argentine society has no tolerance for going backwards in terms of social policy. When someone in his government tried to introduce a bill to ban abortion at the beginning of 2024, it was the government itself which disowned this person, right? And said, no, we are not pursuing this policy. This is not happening. I've seen a lot of worries outside of Argentina, but also inside of Argentina, that Milei will turn dark and just started, you know, start banning abortion or gay rights, and I just don't see that happening. The one thing where I don't see a liberal policy is drug policy, because Minister Bullrich is very much aligned with the U.S. doctrine of criminalizing drugs, as liberals were skeptical of this approach. But other than that, I don't really see him turning dark, at least anytime soon. And what was the other question? Was there another question?
No, that was it, whether he will turn dark. And the last one on which we usually close is a little recommendation for our readers. So we ask usually our guests whether they have a book recommendation or an article or a podcast that they would recommend for liberals to read or listen to. And Marcus, what do you have for us?
So I have a book here that I would recommend, which is called Arguments for Liberty. It's a book by Aaron Ross Powell and Grant Babcock. It's a compilation of 9 chapters on how you get to be a liberal or a libertarian, as they call them in the US, right? And I think it's interesting because we liberals sometimes don't really know why we are liberals, right? Is it because liberalism is right? Is it because it causes good effects? Is it because our intuitions are just liberal? Is it because we behave liberally and we want others to be liberals? And so there's a lot of content here on how you get to be a libertarian from a utilitarian perspective, a natural rights perspective, an ethical intuitionism perspective. And I think, you know, liberals who read this book will probably identify themselves with one or the other. And that's what I like about this book. It's called Arguments for Liberty, and it was published by the Cato Institute recently.
Perfect. And that's a shout out to Aaron Ross Powell, who has also been a guest at several of our seminars remotely, at least. So shout out to Aaron on this case. Thank you, Marcus, for being so generous with your time. And maybe if people pick up the book, they will find out more reasons why to argue or how to argue for liberty. And maybe some of them just like it because there's a guy with a chainsaw who wants to smash and deregulate things. But then we need to onboard them with better reasons over time, I suppose. Thank you, Marcus. Greetings to Argentina. And I guess we will continuously update on the situation on Milei because the midterms are coming up in October. Very interesting times ahead. Best wishes to you. Thank you for joining us. And for all the listeners, please subscribe and share this episode and let us know what else we can improve. See you in the next episode.